Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, a little warm out there with the sun, but the dew points are in the 50s, so not very sticky. Going to get one more blast here of hot air in the St. Louis area. David Strom from hotair.com is back with us on this Monday afternoon to catch up on some political things, etc., up in Minneapolis. How are you, Mr. Strom?
Hey, I'm on the air with you, so life could hardly be better.
I like that answer. That is a good answer. I'm going to walk you through this afternoon, David Strom, a bit of an experiment, because I haven't done this story yet. I don't know if you've seen it, but I'm genuinely curious about your opinion before we get into some other things. So there was a story in the New York Times today, and it might have been yesterday. Okay, it was sometime in the last couple of days. And the headline was, she was fired for a comment on her private Facebook account, a look at how one state has turbocharged the crackdown on anyone who has criticized Charlie Kirk after his death. So this is in Muncie, Indiana at Ball State University. Are you familiar with this at all?
I am not. So
okay, well, this is good then.
You're going to catch...
Yeah. I like it. I like that. All right, so her name is Suzanne Schwartz, and it says 2 days after Charlie Kirk was killed, Suzanne Schwartz, an employee at Ball State University, woke up to a cascade of missed calls, texts, and voicemail messages from numbers she did not know. They were calling me all kinds of names, threatening my job. It was very awful curse words under the sun. I immediately texted my supervisor and I said, I think I have a situation. So what she figured out, and you probably could guess this by now, is that something that she posted on her Facebook page went viral, and Libs of TikTok, which has been outing people up there for some of this, slaps it up on their website, and eventually then she gets fired. Now, I want to read you what she wrote on her page, okay? Because I do think that there some of these things are each case is different. So she said, let me be clear. If you think Charlie Kirk was a wonderful person, we can't be friends. His death is a tragedy, and I can and I do feel for his wife and children. I believe in the resurrection. While it's difficult, can and do pray for his soul. Charlie Kirk's death is a reflection of the violence, fear, and hatred he sowed. It does not excuse his death, and it's a sad truth. And she capitalized and. The shooting is a tragedy, and I can do and feel for college campuses experiencing active shooter situation. The deaths of Melissa and Mark Hortman, you know them, in Minneapolis last month, and the children shot in Colorado today are all tragedies that also deserve your attention. And then the last comment is cut off by the screen capture that I took, but it says something about how, you know, he died in the name of the Second Amendment because he was the Second Amendment. So in this particular situation, I don't agree, you know, with someone who says we can't be friends. But when I read this story in the New York Times, now, David, here's what I say. There's always things that could be missing here from this account, right?
Yep.
And she is a progressive, and she's identified as a progressive in this article. But to me, I mean, it's not like me to be empathetic. Anyone who knows me, Strom, will tell you that. I don't feel that that is a fireable offense for writing that. What do you think?
I don't think that's either a fireable offense or even one that, you know, deserves social opprobrium on the level.
I don't either. There were plenty that did, but this one seems, I don't know. I don't like going after everyone out there who says something on their Facebook page. And this one seemed to not be, I mean, I don't know. The world's gotten crazy, right?
It has. And there certainly is a faction out there who are interested in canceling anyone for any dissent at all. And, you know, I think if someone, you know, merely says, look, I didn't agree with Charlie Kirk, so I'm not going to get involved in, all of the eulogies out there. But, you know, here's how I feel about political violence towards anyone, which is totally unacceptable. That's fine. I mean, there are plenty of liberals about which I would say precisely that. And it ought to be perfectly socially acceptable. You shouldn't have to bow down to the altar of someone in order to share the common civilized idea that one does not resolve disputes with a gun.
Yeah. I think that's going to be interesting to kind of keep a look on moving forward. You had to have written about Jimmy Kimmel. I kind of, have repeated myself so often on this. I don't like him. I'm not a fan. I don't think he's funny. I don't care if he ever comes back. Obviously, he's back. Did not like the FCC, even the appearance of the FCC being involved. And I'm kind of disappointed that more conservatives seemingly were not on my side on that. A little disappointed, Strom. That's what I'll tell you.
Well, I was on your side.
I know,
on that.
You were. You're a principled man.
There were conservatives. I mean, I would say that opinion was split, and it shouldn't have been. I think what happened post Charlie Kirk's assassination was a sense among a lot of Republicans and conservatives that it's time to impose on the left the same rules that they have imposed on us. And, to be fair, Jimmy Kimmel has celebrated the cancellation of plenty of conservatives.
Oh, he has, no doubt.
And so he is not someone who has a right to lecture us about hypocrisy.
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I look at that and say, Brendan Carr getting in the middle of this actually stepped on what was likely to happen anyway, which was, Kimmel getting yanked for being a jerk. And he may actually have gotten fired for that otherwise, because he's a huge money loser. They're probably looking for an excuse to fire him, and now they can't.
Yeah, because he's a martyr. The contract's up, and I don't know where that is going to head. But I find it interesting just because here's another reason I'm disappointed in that storyline. There was a bigger story about censorship last week. You know, this Google story and what they admitted and what you and I talked about during COVID and a lot of guests we were trying to highlight that we finally have been vindicated on. That is a major story. But by the way, started here partially in Missouri with Eric Schmidt, a now senator who is the attorney general, who is filing lawsuits about some of this stuff. And it finally comes out.
Doing great work.
Right. Exactly. So that's a bigger story and, gets shoveled down the New York Times and the Washington Post columns because they don't want to talk about the real censorship that went on from the Biden administration. So there's a lot of things that have happened media-wise and coverage-wise. I get it. He's a celebrity, so he gets more attention, right?
Yeah, and getting back to the conservative side of this, we stepped on our message. Donald Trump stepped on our message. Particularly, we're also fighting with the European Union. And so to have Brendan Carr and Donald Trump appear to push the censorship, and we can argue about whether they cross the line or not, really just, made our case 1,000 times harder. This is really, it really ought to be a black and white issue.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, we agree. Absolutely. David Strom is here from hotair.com. So, I was talking quite a bit last week and she was making the rounds and I had to play some of the audio because it was so comical of Kamala and her book. But how about the Washington Post? And you wrote about this over the weekend. The best that can be said about Harris's step back into the spotlight is that it's happening now. Democrats have a real shot at victory in 2028, but they won't have time to waste on someone like the former vice president. I thought it was just the evil conservatives that were saying mean things about the former vice president, David.
Well, in my column, I made the crack that Kamala Harris should be glad that she wasn't, out on a walk with Kristi Noem because You know, she might have gotten a bullet in the back of her head, you know. That was just vicious. And I think it's an indication that, you know, it's not just that, you know, they're angry at her for having blown what they all thought was a very winnable race, but they are tired of her whining about it. I mean, they spent $2 billion. They handed her the nomination. They really gave it to her on a silver platter. You know, she had billions of dollars of free media from, you know, a really compliant Pravda media, and she blew it, and now she's whining about it. And so they just want to take her out back, shoot her, and put her in the wood chipper, rhetorically speaking. And the Washington Post is the voice of the liberal establishment, and that was their version of doing precisely that.
So one thing that's interesting, Mark Halperin, I know you in your column, you sort of connected the video link to this. So he's one of I would say that he's one of the better political reporters out there. He seems to get things straight. I think he was he's a former ABC guy that went independent, right? But he said this is an interesting observation. We've seen stories criticizing the book tour, her performance, some scathing stuff. What we haven't seen is the Bidens, including Hunter Biden, come at her. And I think if the Bidens read the full book, Halperin says, they'll see there's even more in there that would make them unhappy. I think the question is, do they do it now or do they wait for their own books, which, don't forget, are coming out? That could be fascinating kind of to watch, right?
Well, and I think we actually saw the first shot, you know, the Bidens, for all their flaws and for all the amount of annoyance that they gave the establishment, have a lot of chits to bring in. And I think what we saw in the Washington Post was the first of many that will also come out in those books. I mean, there were a lot of people behind the scenes that gave a thumbs up to the Washington Post to, you know, to blast her like that. I mean, the Sunday opinion page of the Washington Post is one of the most read pieces of real estate in the world for anyone interested in politics. And so, you know, they got the green light from powerful Democrats, and that undoubtedly included the Biden family.
But when they say, this is what's interesting to me, let's break down this, Democrats have a real shot at victory in 2028. Well, look, these presidential races are close, and we know that they've been close in certainly all of modern history, maybe. Although this last one wasn't that close electorally, was it? But what gives the Washington Post any kind of indication that the Democrats have a shot at real victory in 2028? Because whoever gave the green light for that, look, you got green lights that could come from the AOCs and from, you know, some of the more radical people. You got green lights from, and I've even seen him written about this past weekend. I've been talking about Rahm Emanuel because I think he's going to make a serious run here. You got Pritzker here. So they have candidates, but what the most fascinating thing to me, because we know the standard bearer will be for conservatives will be J.D. Vance and a guy like Eric Schmidt here in Missouri. Those are the young, you know, Republicans who have a very strong future. But on the Democrat side, that's a lot less defined, because will it come from the crazy side of the equation or the not as crazy side of the equation?
Well, I mean, the Democrats are going to go through a huge civil war on this. And what we know is that the money is on one side, or at least the establishment money is on one side, because there's actually a large number of radical billionaire Democrats out there who are going to back someone like AOC. But, you know, the Chamber of Commerce types, you know, and the you know, the venture capital people are going to back some establishment person. I think they'll love to get Rahm Emanuel into that slot.
Yeah. As a Republican, I'd be worried about that, because I think he's a smart guy and he's not crazy on the cultural issues. So there would be appeal there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that the Democratic establishment believes that they don't have to worry about MAGA. They have to worry about Trump, that that Trump is unique and that we will go back to a more normal politics, you know, as they understand it, after Trump is off the scene. I'm totally unconvinced because I think the problem that the Democrats have is the Democrats.
Well, and we saw that. Yeah. And we saw this in the polling last week, that Harry Enten guy is having a blast because he gets to go on there and talk about how they're 21 points. The Democrats are 21 points under on crime. I mean, they've not narrowed the gap on any of these issues out there that they lost the election on. So I know there's time for that, but they don't want to, you know, say that a woman who has a penis is not a woman. They'll not do that because they fear about the reaction on the extreme left. So, you know, some of the right has issues not along those lines, but there's obviously the extremes that pull people in different directions. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch. One more topic that you wrote about, and this is fascinating to me. So a couple years ago, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer, right? And I don't think you are. You said that in your column. I had an appointment to get the shingles vaccine because I've known a couple of people who have had it, and it's been awful. And I guess with the shingles vaccine, it's like a two-part deal. And apparently, you might feel a little sick after you get it, and that happens with some vaccines. Well, I never kept the appointment. I never rescheduled it. But you had a column last week that was pretty interesting on the shingles vaccine, David Strom.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point of the column was, you know, we have to get back to informed consent. We have thrown it out the window. And the reason why I framed it around the shingles vaccine, Shingrix, is that a new study has come out that shows that after the first injection, it's two parts, you know, a month apart.
Right.
Or at least a month apart. After the first one, your chance of getting shingles goes up by 1,100%. You're 11 times more likely to get shingles after that first shot in the first 30 days than if you hadn't gotten a shot. And now, if you get the second shot, you know, your chances plummet.
Right.
And over time, even if you only get the first shot, your chances go back down. But, you know, my argument is you have to tell people things like this. If you don't tell people things like this, you are not giving them informed consent because there's a risk. And 1,100% increase in getting a horrible disease is not insignificant. So, and not everybody has exactly the same chance of getting shingles. We do this all the time where, you know, we do the shotgun approach. And, you know, so we need to get back to the notion that informing people rather than hiding things from people should be the standard in medicine.
I agree, especially in the aftermath of COVID with all the nonsense out there because the trust issues are. And, you know, look, I would say this, and I've got a great primary care doctor. I have a great psychiatrist right now. And, you know, those are maybe hard to find. You know, I've had primary care physicians who were not people that I trusted. So, and this is a concern just societally moving forward, because I think we have less and less of that where you have relationships with your doctors because just of the math and the demand and all of that. And then there's the trust factor as well. So it does say in that shingles thing that I think that the increase goes up significantly if you're over 65. I am still under 65, so maybe I should still get my shingles vaccination because that stuff's nasty from what I can hear. David Strom, always great to have you on. Thank you so much on this Monday afternoon. Have a great week.
Yeah, you too.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks, Dave.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. PNC's apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He drove his vehicle through the front doors of the church. He then exited his vehicle, firing several rounds at individuals within the church.
The FBI is committed to continue finding out the facts, circumstances, and motives behind this tragedy. I can confirm at this time that the FBI is now leading the investigation and is investigating this as an act of targeted violence.
So this is one of those stories, and I would not be surprised if the majority of you listening out there right now haven't even heard about this. This was an attack on a Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints meeting house in Grand Blanc Township in Michigan. It's a town of about 8,000 people, and it happened yesterday morning. This guy has been identified. I will not offer his name. He was 40 years old. He's from Burton, Michigan. He went to high school nearby. He served for 4 years in the Marine Corps. He was a sergeant, according to military records. He was a member of a vehicle recovery crew in Iraq, which the media accounting of this says might have put him into hostile territory, exposing him to enemy fire and the improvised explosive devices often used in war. So yesterday morning, he drives a four-door pickup truck with two American flags prominently hoisted from the cab, crashes the truck into the church building. He starts opening fire. Then there's a fire that engulfs and consumes the church. Two people died of gunshot wounds, and the bodies of two more people were found in the wreckage of the building from the fire. They got him, though, fast.
Within 8 minutes, that suspect was neutralized in the back parking lot of the church.
Yeah, so they took him out. He dead at this point. What happened here, though?
The FBI is investigating this as an act of targeted violence, and we are continuing to work to determine a motive. In the past 24 hours, our investigative squads and specialty teams have been out all night exhausting leads, some of which have been coming in from the public.
So Carolyn addressed this a little earlier in the briefing, because the question is like, okay, who was targeted? Obviously, was it the Church of Latter-day Saints, people in a church? Why were they targeted? The FBI says,
called this an act of targeted violence. Can you tell us who you believe the target was? A specific person, the LDS church, another group?
Well, as of right now, again, as this is an ongoing investigation, what I would say is when I say targeted violence, I mean targeted within our state and within our community. Right now, what we are here for are the families and the victims, and we're going to work diligently in order to make sure we can bring closure for them as well.
Yeah, and I mentioned Carolyn. She addressed this at a briefing earlier.
Based on my conversations with the FBI director, all they know right now is this was an individual who hated people of the Mormon faith. And they are trying to understand more about this, how premeditated it was, how much planning went into it. All of those questions have yet to be answered, but certainly will be answered by the FBI.
So a couple of pieces of audio here. This is someone who witnessed it all going down, a parishioner.
I went out into the park, or went out to the front of the building, and that's when I saw the shooter start aiming at people and starting to shoot. I'm thinking I'm a goner. I'm going to get hit because he's shooting at me. He missed every time. It was the scariest I've ever been in my life. It wasn't the shooter trying to shoot me. It was, is my family okay?
Yeah, I mean, that's just devastating, and luckily his family was okay. And then you have the governor of Michigan saying, let's lower the rhetoric, even though her side keeps calling those of us on the other side Nazis.
Now, like everyone I know, we have lots of questions. How could this happen? What created this moment? Why? And that's motivated by a genuine motivation to understand, to learn, to prevent in the future. But I want to caution everyone, while we are working hard, while the good men and women who are working hard are doing so with due diligence, at this juncture, speculation is unhelpful and it can be downright dangerous. So just ask that people lower the temperature of rhetoric.
I just think it's a story that hasn't gotten a whole lot of coverage right now, so I'm waiting for some answers.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, something that I have not talked about on the show yet, and I want to talk about it, and I likely will talk about it. I took a tour up on Friday morning in North City to see some of the tornado damage. I had never gone up there. I'd been around Forest Park and seen some of the trees and stuff, but never went out to some of the areas that have been really, really devastated. And my friend Pete Foley took me out there. He's been doing some volunteer work, and one of the questions that Pete had, and I think a lot of people have at this point, is what's going to happen with these neighborhoods? I mean, you're looking at a situation, and it's weird. You know, this is what tornadoes do. You can see one house that looks like it's perfectly fine, and the next house or the church or the business is just down to, you know, to rubble or a torn roof or something along those lines. And I think one of the points that Pete wanted to make is, despite all the great work that's being done in the community, and you have some Rams money and all that, these neighborhoods are not going to, you know, be saved unless something else happens. And then along those lines, and Fred, I still want to do this topic maybe tomorrow, there's a piece that's in the Wall Street Journal today, I think. It was either in the Sunday paper or today, about how FEMA is paralyzed and how St. Louis is paying the price. And they feature, you know, stories from here and what happened in the spring. And they say St. Louis is a test case for the Trump administration's new policy of shifting more responsibility to states and cities. So, and I'm fine with that, but I would like to talk a little bit more about some of the damage that occurred and what I saw. So we might do that on the show tomorrow. Let's talk a little baseball. John Mozeliak had his sort of farewell news conference earlier today. Scotty Warman is with us to talk about this from FanDuel Sports Midwest. Getting ready for hockey season, I guess, at this point. But how are you, Scott?
Oh, you.
Oh, there you go. I got to punch you in. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. As a baseball fan, not so good. We got five Midwestern cities that are in the postseason, four from the Great Lakes, but not the St. Louis Cardinals, and not a lot of hope for the St. Louis Cardinals in the next couple of years. So we've talked about this, you and I and Ethan, numerous times as this season is wrapped up. Did you learn anything today from what Mo said? I had Frank on in the last hour. Anything that caught your ear?
I think Mo was pretty much saying his final goodbye and actually thanking Frank and so much of the media that have covered him throughout his, you know, 30 years with the organization. And, you know, now we'll find out tomorrow in the 10 o'clock news conference where this organization goes forward with the new direction and the baseball operations with Chaim Bloom. From a non-baseball aspect, I thought it was kind of interesting that you brought up about the crime in the city of St. Louis.
Oh, he did. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. And well, so that was kind of interesting.
It's
but,
a legit
okay,
issue.
But,
it's a factor. I don't think that's not the only thing keeping fans away.
Obviously he's gotten to know Chaim Bloom very well, and it has a positive aspect as far as where the direction of this team will be going moving forward. But, you know, part of that, you know, I was one of the questions from one of the Post-Dispatch writers, and he said, I feel positive about the city, too. I've been here for so many years. And he goes, but, you know, he just kind of dropped the whole crime thing, which I thought was kind of interesting. But anyway, I think overall, Mo said that he knew that the time was here and it was time to just pass the torch, if you will. And that's what he's done. I mean, 30 years in one place is almost unheard of, you know, in almost any business that you're in. So, you know, he had a great run. And I know there are a lot of naysayers and fans, and understandably so. With the last few years have been un-Cardinal-like. They have been tough. There's no question about it. I think you take a step back and you look at what he's been a part of, learning under Walt Jocketty. I know Mo has told me that he learned so much from Walt, and after taking over the reins when Walt left back in 2008, you know, obviously there was a lot of success at the beginning of his tenure as general manager of the Cardinals. And we can't overlook, you know, 2011, 2015 was quite a run there for this organization. And so, I think I'm just really intrigued to see what is said tomorrow.
Yeah, me too.
And And I'm really, I was telling this on, you know, I was on with one of the shows down the hall last week, and I've done some research here of Chaim Bloom and Rob Cifolio, who came from the Cleveland Guardians, and just seeing what they've done from a drafting, developing, international signings and all this stuff, and really the success that they have had, especially here immediately when you think of Chaim's work that he's done with the Boston Red Sox. I mean, they have some incredible young talent that's already up with the team and still, you know, a large prospect pool. And that was pretty much the oversight of what Chaim did before he came here. And the same can be said for, you see, with Cleveland came out of nowhere. And there's a lot of young players.
That's a great story.
Yeah,
it
really is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. And so to see what they've done in their previous stints before coming here in St. Louis, I am excited. Now, is this going to happen overnight, Mark? No. And I think one of the things that, you know, as we look forward, you know, what's going to happen in 2026? I think you're going to see a lot of roster changeover. But people also have to remember that barring some unforeseen circumstances, and you and I talked about this the last time I believe I was on the air, there's a work stoppage in 2027.
Yeah, that's right.
So that might have an effect also on what he can do or what the organization can do moving forward. Sure, they want to try to win at the earliest time possible, but having a stoppage, a work stoppage of any kind, obviously hampers maybe something that Chaim wants to do. Not an excuse. This is reality for all teams, especially mid small market teams.
Absolutely.
In Major League Baseball.
Understood.
But I do know this. Talking to one of my cohorts who spoke to a couple of the young kids that got called up during the season, and because Chaim oversaw, as we all know, the minor league system, what have you, and they already said they had noticed a big difference in how things were handled in all aspects from the minor league level compared to what they did a year ago. So I think that that right there is a small step in what is important for teams like St. Louis and Kansas City and others, that you got to draft and develop, and that's huge. And so I think that's definitely a positive sign.
Hey, Scotty, Ethan here. Harping back on Mo again, one question here. How do you think that at least in the next several years he's going to be remembered by the fan base? I mean, is it going to depend on how Chaim does here in these first few years, how quickly they get back to competing? Because, I mean, I think we all can agree that there is some jadedness right now as far as their frustration and viewing him as the face of the last few years. But, you know, simultaneously, like you talked about, the great run that the Cardinals had for many years and him being a huge part of that. How do you think that fans, at least for the next handful of years, are going to view John Mozeliak and his time in St. Louis?
Well, I think we all learn, and I think, Mark, you'd agree with me on this, no matter what the subject matter is, time heals. And I think time heals, especially those that are feel like they have been, I don't know how they feel, anti-Mo or what have you, that I think there is some that will sit back and kind of take it all in. You know, we're in a society, and Ethan, you're growing up in a society where everybody wants instant results. And that's really not that's not feasible in most things in life, and especially when you talk about professional sports. And so I think if once fans and Cardinal fans, I think we all know, we all grew up as Cardinal fans. We all know we can be biased, but I think we're all very well educated. I think Whitey Herzog was one guy that really educated Mark and I in our era about being baseball fans. And I think once they see the whole picture instead of the here and now, I think most fans, not all fans, but I think most fans will sit back and go, oh, well, you know, I was pretty hard on Mo, but, you know, he did do some really good things, you know, early on when he was the general manager and had to, you know, finagle through, you know, Albert leaving for Anaheim and Tony retiring and, you know, still making it to the playoffs and another World Series and a few NLCSs during that time. And that's not everybody can do something like that. And he was the head of the whole operation, making that transition with two power names, two Hall of Famers that left the organization. So I think in time, Ethan, I think in time that there will be some fan base to kind of sit back and go, yeah, well, it wasn't great. Wasn't a great finish, but, you know, he did do some things. But right now people are just, they're really upset by what's transpired. And I always say this, and I include myself in this, we truly are, as baseball fans, you think about the run since basically the DeWitts took over and Walchocki came in, you get McGuire, you have the home run chase, and then you have all this playoff baseball. And even in the late you know, 2010s. You didn't make it until 2019. You were off for 2-3 years. You were still competitive. You were still in the race until the last week or even the last day of the regular season. And there's not a lot of organizations that can say what happened during that whole time span of what the Cardinals organization were able to do to still be in the conversation, you know, in late September and even into October. So I think people need to kind of also look at that when they look at the grand scheme of things.
I think you're right about that. By the way, would you rather be the GM of the New York Mets and a $340 million payroll that doesn't make the postseason or the St. Louis Cardinals?
Well, you know, being the GM and being able to spend a lot of money like that, it would be pretty nice, but I think there is more pressure. Obviously, you're in the New York market, and the Mets are just getting absolutely destroyed. But at the end of the day, I think it's one of those situations, Mark, with the Mets where it's like, man, they were just killing it the first almost 3 months of the season, and then they just choked.
Well,
and
look at the Tigers.
Right?
My goodness. 15 and a half game lead.
They had such a massive
lead. 15 and a half game lead. Yeah,
but they're a young team that has a lot of promise, and they showed it, and they've faded, obviously, down the stretch here. But the Mets are a team where you spend all this money, and you're expected to win. And to me, if you're one of those guys that's making $700 million or $200 million or whatever ungodly amount of money, you got to produce. I'm sorry. And so, you know, a lot of it goes on the execution of what the players are doing out on the field. And obviously
Absolutely.
That wasn't happening. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, but it's just honesty because I watch a lot of baseball. Our buddy that used to be here, Ryan Helsley, he hit a flat tire.
Ooh,
I mean, he was just getting absolutely clobbered.
We're not shocked.
Trying to be a setup guy for Edwin Diaz. And that was something I'm sure they did not anticipate at all.
All right, Scotty Warman, always great to have you on. If we had a little bit more time, we could probably start talking about the Blues because I think there's a game even tomorrow night, right? Preseason?
Oh, yes, there is against the Stars at Enterprise Center, big boy. The real season's about to get underway.
All right, we'll be talking much more
about
the Blues. Scott, I appreciate it.
It's hard to put into words how much it hurts to lose all four matches. It was, probably one of the lowest moments of my career, but, it turned out to be one of the most special just because I've got great friends in this room. First couple days of this tournament, you know, at times it felt like a perfect storm of things were happening against us.
Yeah, world number one, Scotty Scheffler, not so great at the Ryder Cup over the weekend. We gave you some previews and an update on Friday. Dan Reardon is back with us. I don't usually do a post, tournament wrap-up with you, but because the fan story and the ugliness of some of this got into the news, I figure it'd be worth coming on here. But we kind of got smoked, although yesterday it got interesting, didn't it, Dan?
Yeah, Mark, I have a simple way of looking back at a Ryder Cup and making it and evaluating when it took place. And I believe that the singles tell you about the quality of the players and the team matches tell you about the quality of the captains. And I think that's the way this played out. And I think that's the way it played out 2 years ago in Rome. Luke Donald is really good at that job. And Keegan was a little bit probably overmatched. This week, the captain can do three things to affect the outcome. He can choose the team. I think he did a great job on that. He can set up the course, and he says he did a bad job on that. And I think as far as setting up the teams, he was a little stubborn. Everybody kept talking about Scotty's 0-4. You know who his partners were for those four matches? His partners were Russell Henley, J.J. Spahn, and Bryson DeChambeau. You know who Rory's partners were? His partners were Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry.
Yeah.
I think that deck was a little stacked. Scotty would never admit to it, and he's going to take a lot of guilt, but I don't look at him as 1-for-5 as much as one. He won his point when he was on his own, and he didn't win when he was a little burdened by his partners.
So I want to play you what Jim Gray said about the ugliness of the fans.
You go to see these guys play to perform. They're there to entertain us, and it was disgraceful. And the PGA of America ought to be ashamed. When they put out this lady, Heather McMahon, who is supposed to be a comedian, and she's leading chants with the crowd, with 50,000 people out there paying $750, and she's leading the chant, F U Rory. Who thought this was a good idea?
I mean, Dan, what in the hell? Some of this is just, and I thought, I'm going to play this for audio cut of the day. I thought Rory handled this very well. But yeah, there's got to be some changes, right?
Absolutely. And the irony of that is Rory in his pre-tournament press conference raved about how privileged he felt that he could now live in America and raise his daughter in America, all those kinds of possible things,
Tough.
It, it, My first Ryder Cup was 1987. It's the first time the U.S. lost on American soil. And the contrast between then and now is just startling.
Yeah, I hate even the you've heard me rant about this, the get in the hole guys, too, because just shut up, okay? Especially when you're yelling, get in the hole from a tee box or something like that. You're just a moron. You're an idiot. But look, alcohol gets involved, and people do stupid things. So I don't know, you know, you go to tournaments where they don't even allow you to have cell phones or anything like that. I don't know what you can do here in the messaging leading up to the, you know, the President's Cup, which will be here in St. Louis, or the Ryder Cup, but that was ugly over the weekend. I mean, his wife got beer thrown on her, et cetera.
I believe it was the New York thing. I think it'll be ugly, at Adair. I think it'll be ugly at Hazeltine, but I think that was a New York thing more than anything else. And I hope that is the case. But I will tell you, in 2016, after the Ryder Cup was over and the Americans had won, I was the second question in the interview to Rory McIlroy. I said, Rory, I was embarrassed to be on the golf course with you, the kind of taunting you were getting from the Minnesota fans. And I said, what do we do about this? And he said, well, you know, I see guys out there at 7:30 in the morning with a beer in their hand, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I couldn't expect anything less than that.
Right.
So he was very, very understanding. But what took place on Saturday, you got the article from Joel Beal in Golf Digest. It's impossible to capture how vile and ugly what took place on. I said to somebody today, I think Rory probably has a case of PTSD going through that. How hard was that for him not to want to go into the gallery?
And that makes this even better. And I'm not going to play, I have the audio cut of the day sounder. I'm going to skip that. But that makes what he said here even more impressive, because I thought Rory handled it with a lot of class. Dan, thank you so much for all the coverage. I'm going to play this soundbite, but thank you, Dan Reardon.
Enjoyed it, Mark.
Here's what Rory said.
I don't think we should ever accept that in golf. I think golf should be held to a higher standard. But, you know, we will be making sure to say to our fans in Ireland in 2027 that what happened here this week is not acceptable. And it's, come and support your home team. You know, come and support your team. You know, I think if I was an American, I would be annoyed that people, I didn't hear a lot of shouts for Scotty today, but I heard a lot of shouts against me. And it's like, support your players. You know, that's the thing. So we shut them up by our performance and how we played, and we tried to, I chirped back a few times because it got to me a few times, but we tried to handle everything that came our way with class and poise, and for the most part, I felt like we did that.
What a classy answer from Rory McIlroy, and that is audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.